12, side 23. This is still the 30th of January. It was Walter Jacob, Mary Harrison, and Callie Dinman. Okay, Walter, last week we talked about your stand on the State of Israel, and then Gabby asked you what your father's stand was, and you said that, I think I have it here, that he was quite skeptical, though he was for the State of Israel, and then you sort of said, well, see, he's right. I'd like you to comment on that, please.
Well, first of all, I'll give you a little bit of family background. When it came to the 30s, I was trying to find a place of refuge, and certainly saw the support of Israel, any kind of creation of that was the likelihood of this
day.
This is my better take. And supported it, and also supported. What I meant by we'll see who is right is that one has to look at this long term. In the short term, this certainly has helped us. It's not only as a place of refuge, but also as far as strengthening the Jewish identity. Is in the long term, is national identity something that will strengthen Judaism or not? There are plenty of problems with this in the biblical world. How much energy do we put into defending borders? How much energy do we put into defending ideas? How capable are we? Destroying ourselves and releasing war. These kinds of things, which have risen before, were created to harness fanaticism in the first century. The Romans would probably have destroyed Jerusalem with their weapon, but they were aided by the fact that zealots inside. There's a good bit of danger in any nationalism, this nationalism.
But you feel the State of Israel, not just for years, years old, is there to stay. That is not the question. The question is more of what to do.
Yes, and well, you know, there to stay. Also, if you look at this through the eyes of the missing, you have to ask yourself how long is there to stay? Forever? Nice, but it's doubtful. What really happens when the world configuration changes? There is no configuration change. Us outside of Israel is how much would you put into the state, how much would you put into the survival of Jews in general. So those are real questions that the religion has to deal with. And also, besides that, we've got lots of issues in the relationship with the diaspora. They very often feel that they have the last word. They sure don't want us to say anything about their family. Well, that's not the way the diaspora has been structured in most of Jewish history. It's
Israel has come.
No, because up to very recently, we have been the power. They have been there, but the real power is God and God too.
So it's really back.
Yes, well, money plays no role in that because the Israelis are fighting sometimes. But they are a major player in the Near East, but certainly not a major power in the world. It's not always clearly, it's clearly understood.
What is your
well, I think he's trying to create a situation that reasonably the whole area is too, I'd say, Israel, even Israel with its problems, quite sure it was in charge and how far they can be able to control that. But at least you have some feeling that there's a way, a path towards succession, but you don't know that on the other hand. Who is the next person? Jordan, Syria. Egypt, Iran.
And you don't think that the fact that we no longer have a soldier for the practice for all the resources that we need?
Well, that's rational. States are really. Even if you force a peace on them, you force people to be in the or Lebanon, when the pressure is slightly off, the whole thing will rapidly continue.
Walter, I'd like to talk to you about the
both of us have had a long-term interest in nature, in gardens as well. So long before the biblical garden was created, I visited loads and loads of gardens. Always had a garden. So about 15 years ago, we had the idea that it would be nice in the temple to have a biblical, especially as by that time we had gotten the guide to guard the book. So we were well aware of what existed in the dinosaurs. It wasn't. There was virtually nothing around the that point, Irene had been involved with FIPS. She started the docent program there and educated a whole series of classes that worked out very well. And in addition to that, she had started a program of biblical plans this late winter when hardly anybody visited. So a program that she saw gained a lot of attention and a lot of attention. So the next natural step was to create a biblical botanical garden. Now you might say, why not at FIPS? Well, FIPS at that point was a city organization to move the bureaucracy, as she discovered, even with the docent program. It was extremely important. So this seemed like a likely spot. In addition, it would be a good interfaith project. We have a lot of interfaith work here that would bring about understanding of Judaism. And this would take it down a little further. So we started by, first of all, looking at potential sites. And looked at the site on Devonshire Fifth Avenue, as well as the site on Moorwood Fifth Avenue. Moorwood Fifth Avenue was large and flat, probably decided too large, and the corner of Moorwood is too busy, so there's a lot of traffic. Devonshire is a quiet street, and the only thing we had on that side was a nursery school playground, which was pretty well blocked off with bushes. And then some bushes by the temple. When we explored that to see how deep it was and what was back there on a Shabbat morning, we disturbed two bombers who were sleeping in the bushes. And those were really the only individuals displaced by this gun. So we decided that the next thing to do would be to draw a rough plan, which we did on a great big sheet of wrapping paper, and then to show it to somebody who might be a potential backer and to see if the individual might be interested. So one of the many occasions when Murray and Devine we got together, we showed it to him and asked him might be interested in supporting this. And he asked us what we thought were the approximate costs. And I had done a very vague sort of study, based really on the work that I had done in our garden at home, which was putting in an underground watering system, about the water model pipe. Underground electrical system. Of course, I've done that entirely myself, as well as the experience and so on. So we figured that $10,000 would be a good amount. He indicated that he would be able to support it. And we ought to get real solid architectural figures. Also get someone, I believe he got someone in his office to draw it up on the picture. Because always was a rough sketch. Of course, once it got onto paper with the work that needed to be done to create the pools, the river, some of that was rather complex. And we found that there's only two or three people looking wonderful for what happened to me in Pittsburgh, but very international. Unfortunately, we paid too much. And a neighbor of ours was involved in the pool construction, his name was Robert, and he did the work with spraying concrete. By the time we got that going and looked into the eyes of million, which might be appropriate for leaving some pools, bridges. It was obvious it was going to cost a lot more than $1,000. And the whole project would also have to be fenced for security reasons and also for people involved in the water. So when we saw that this was going to cost probably in the neighborhood of $100,000. We decided nevertheless to go ahead. And Agnini started working on the plan to enter it, which was not only identifying the plans, which is not easy because there are often some choices what is going to take on time. And then secondly, discovering where you might get them. I went to the fundraising. Yes, I went to the officers and said, told them the project, the parameters of it, what was intended, the information, the efforts involved. And they indicated that if you could get the money for it, there's no problem. So I then started to raise the money for it. Decided right from the beginning that this was going to be impossible. And we asked a lot of people for a lot of things. And so we decided that I would only ask people to give us like $10,000 for the project. They would be on the clock. And so started talking. Was surprised that people were very interested in the idea, and because of my leading reputation with gardeners and fish, I understood that this would work. A few people indicated that $10,000 was more than they would be willing to give. One or two people said that they would be happy to give $3,000. But I said, I'm sorry, in this case, I can only accept this $10,000.
How many instances?
There were two. Because once you start breaking that gap, you're going to be in trouble. To raise this money, $3,000 sums, drugs. So within 6 months or so, the money was in. And then we started building. And it was quite exciting to see it go up. And at the same time, I really started to put out the plans. When possible plans, when not possible seeds. And of course, the real problem then is these are plans. Nobody knows how to do it. Nobody knows how to do it. And so when you run into trouble, there's nowhere to ask. There's no reference book in which you can look. Because for common plants that are grown in green patches, there are a couple of things that are written. There are trouble with populations within the red book. Trouble with bait ponds, there's no place to go. So this was a lot of effort, a lot of risk trying to see what would work and what didn't work. And then, of course, the problem of what to do in winter. So we created an area for the temple with lights, with big plants. We've had lots of problems because of the building. other's home, partly in a small greenhouse that we have. And I set up a bank of fluorescents basement. There are 28-foot double row fluorescents. They use less, but they also get hot. There's ballast. So that was a problem. And then when you leave, you have to get somebody to take care of it, which is also a problem. You didn't travel that much, but still you're going. So a little later, we blasted in the porch. That created a region of Mediterranean sunflowers. So there were all of these headings and potential problems. But the garden was growing, and our first year in which we were open was 86. So we just adopted. Of course, at the very beginning, with a lot of the plants still quite small, it didn't look like plants. But we immediately recognized another problem about which we could do absolutely nothing. Many of the biblical plants, most of the biblical plants, because of the nature of Israel, flower in the spring. Nothing is really interesting in the summer because it's too dry. We're going to have visitors in summer. So what you do is interesting. So right from the beginning, we decided we would have plants in the garden, plants in the garden, which would be two things. One is that it creates color in the garden. Secondly, it would enable us to show people that people have loved the garden, have named plants that clearly were not there. After the tubers, so that has worked out quite successfully. And the system of labels that we have, which have a Latin name, a Hebrew name, a common name, a biblical verse, a biblical citation. So biblical plants are one color, and for Greek plants are a different color. We restrict ourselves entirely to the plants of the Hebrew Bible, no New Testament plants, or apocryphal plants. And that altogether is 125 species. And if you go into the slightly later course, for example, the Mishnah. The Mishnah mentions the Mishnah of 66 plants. Well, we decided, so we opened the first year and immediately had a very good response. And I really also realized that two things. One was that the garden had been stolen. Couldn't just leave it open. So whenever it was open, we had individuals, workers, coaches. So it's open for 4 hours a day. Those two spots, and they are about 35 to 40 people, but proved much more difficult as to try to get people to actually work. We had, right from the beginning, a very enthusiastic harbor was being built, we had various boards across the stream, so if you could put the pumps out together because the bridges had been broken, we sometimes were worried that there was just only one more thing wandering across the stream on a board. But he was very sure footed, no problem. We had some other volunteers who have put in time, from time to time when we needed, like the lead call from Professor Oakes from the University of Pittsburgh, Bob Whitehill, Bob, who's business community, who has a very good background. That's, sorry, that's John Whitehill. Bob Whitehill is active here in social action. But John has a good background in horticulture and agriculture. But at the very beginning, there was really nobody. And so when it came to moving soil, placing rocks, bringing in a couple of carloads of mushroom or topsoil, there were really just two of us. You have a problem with constant maintenance. The garden is to look around. You have to spend a couple of hours in the house, almost on a daily basis. And so we did that. The best time, of course, was early in the morning. In the summertime, usually we're there, especially on Sunday, at 6 o'clock. We saw very quickly that the garden needed something to keep it interesting for the year. Otherwise, people would say, I've been there, seen the plants, I don't need to. So we decided that we would have a special program for the year. So we did that, starting the second year with a program that not only had plants in it, but also nature. And the first one was called the Doctrine. Plants introduced in Israel through, since the Bible. We picked one plant for every century and load it up into the little booklet, and it was off with it. Something special. This year, our special program will be paper. Next year, our special program will be commercial grade rock. Now, the other things connected with all this is that we also saw pretty quickly that we would like to have something that explains what is really important. So we started paper called Papyrus, which is 4 to 8 pages, comes out 3 times, appears 3 times, and of course it's a little bit easier. Explains the special cell, has articles in it that show the plants involved. And interestingly enough to us is that it has pretty good national circulation.